welcome to another edition of View from the Bleachers podcast. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and I am joined by Sean Powell. Josh is off today. He's had to work a little late due to some weather, and so he will not be joining us this week, but that's okay. Sean, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe, and I join all of the View from the Bleachers readers in wishing you a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
What's it like to be 25, man?
Oh, man, I don't remember. That was 11 years ago. I couldn't tell you. No, but I appreciate the happy birthday. I am not embarrassed about my age. I know a lot of people, especially women, say that they are celebrating their 29th every year. Doesn't bother me. I am 36 today, and I'm
enjoying. Joe, I never knew this, but I'm like 3 months older than you.
There you go. See, I would have pegged you as being younger than me.
Yeah, well, of course. Why wouldn't you? But yeah.
You know, I actually wonder where we all rank in terms of age. I never really stopped to think about that. And I think if you had to say right now, who do you think would be the oldest?
Of who?
Of all the writers on the site.
Oh, geez. I have no clue. I've actually never even really talked to anyone except you and Josh. And
yeah.
The cartoon pictures are hard to judge age by.
Right. You can't really tell. I would guess. I think my guess would probably. Well, I don't know if you remember back in the day. But we had a guy named Cubby Dude that used to write on the site, and he did pretty much book reviews. Oh. And I know for a fact that he was the oldest one that we've ever had, because I think he was in his 60s. But I would have to venture a guess and say I think Liz is probably the oldest, and I say that only because I know she doesn't listen.
Okay.
But
right. It's like you're treading in the dangerous water.
Yeah, here. Treading in some dangerous water. But I'm not sure. I mean, none of us are really old. And so, you know, it's a pretty young staff. And
some of us have old opinions
right,
about things.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, I think it is what it is. We're all pretty young. I think I think the youngest one is Katie, if I'm not mistaken. I believe Katie is about 21 or 22.
Katie, if you're listening, it's been a while since you've had something up there, so.
Yeah, she's scheduled pretty soon. We've got her coming up in the next couple weeks. So now that everybody has turned the podcast off after the first 3 minutes,
right.
We should probably go ahead and start the show. As always, you can follow us on View from the Bleachers Radio on Twitter at VFTB. That's the main Twitter handle. That's the one I operate. Sean is at Powell_Sean with a S-E-A-N. Josh, who's out tonight, is at JC Stats, so that means we're not going to have a JC Stat of the Week this week, which is okay. We'll make up for it next week. And then also you can email the show, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. That's what Timo did earlier this morning, and so we'll address his question later on in the mailbag section. But in the meantime, we've got 1 week left of spring training, and I am champing at the bit for some baseball. I'm not a big fan of spring training baseball. I've mentioned that to you in the past. I tried to watch a game the other day. I had it on. I was sitting there with my 2-year-old watching, and I wasn't getting into it, man. There's just something about not counting that I despise, and I can't watch it until it counts. Have you watched much spring training baseball?
Yeah, you know, I actually have watched several games. I had the MLB TV, although most of the spring training games on there are free anyway, so
yeah.
You don't really have to subscribe. But I've seen some games on there. Just my work schedule allows me to be able to catch games here and there. I watched the game yesterday, which was actually pretty fun, the home run barrage.
Yeah.
Junior Lake had 3 home runs that were just blast. And then Valbuena had 2. He's really been hot this spring. And Mike Olt had another home run, which was really cool to see. To me, I've been watching Baez and Olt mostly this spring training to see how they do. Baez just because, you know, he's the future guy and the big power guy, and he seems to hit a home run every time at the plate. He leads the majors in spring training home runs, which is exciting. And then Olt, just to see if he's kind of come back at the plate, and he certainly has. I mean, he's shown great power, good stroke. So his plate appearances have answered questions. Obviously, we're just waiting to see what he does in the field.
Right. Yeah, I tend to watch on Major League Baseball website as well, and I don't know. I just haven't gotten into it. But I'm excited. I don't know. Did you watch any of the actual opening day baseball in Australia on Saturday?
No, I didn't see any of that. To be honest, I'm kind of annoyed by the whole concept of playing games there now. It bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. What I don't like, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't believe that there's a Sunday night baseball game to start the year. Am I wrong on that, or is there a Sunday night game that's coming up?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard about it.
I don't think that there is.
I don't either.
I think that this one has taken the place of that one. That's the only thing that I despise is I don't tend to watch a lot of baseball other than the Cubs just because we're so busy with that.
Right.
But what I do tend to do is I do get into the concept of Sunday night games, and I actually think I'm looking at it now. I believe there is a game, Sunday night Dodgers Padres, and it doesn't say that that's a spring training game, so I'm assuming that that's a major league game. But I do tend to watch the opening night, at least a portion of it. I remember a couple years ago I watched the Rangers, and not only do I not watch American League baseball, but I definitely don't watch AL West baseball for obvious reasons of when it starts. And I remember watching the game, I think it was last year or the year before, and I remember half the guys on the pitching staffs, I had no idea who they were. The guy that was starting for the Rangers, I believe, was C.J. Wilson. And I remember thinking to myself, who's C.J. Wilson? I don't know who that is. And so it's just sad how much in a bunker – when we follow Cubs baseball, especially with the fact that a lot of times you don't see a lot of these teams in the other league, but once every couple of years, you know, I didn't know who a lot of those guys were.
Right.
You know, which was laughable to me. And then, you know, this year I went ahead and filled out the quote unquote expert predictions on ESPN.com. And that made me laugh even more because I had no idea who to pick. You know, it's asking me how many wins will the Baltimore Orioles pick, and it's like I have no idea.
Right.
I went to Bodog and just looked to see what the over under was, and went with that. So we'll see how bad I do. But I'm assuming that those picks will be up on ESPN.com in the next couple of days, so you can hold me to them. But I don't even remember who I picked. I think I have the Rays winning the World Series against the Cardinals, but I'm not positive.
Ugh.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
If it comes down between the Rays and Cardinals, I hope you're right. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think it was. I either picked the Rays or the Orioles. I can't remember which one I picked, but I did them honestly in about 15 minutes right before dinner and just tried to do it to get it on there. So it is what it is. But let's talk a little baseball here. Cubs baseball, we've got a week of spring training left. And Jesse Rogers of ESPN.com, ESPNChicago.com, has come out with a post the other day over the weekend that basically talked about will Mike Olt make the opening day roster. And I know that this is something we've talked about over the last couple weeks over and over as one of the big storylines for spring training, whether or not Olt would win that third base job over Valbuena and Donnie Murphy. And so I wanted to run through the roster together and just see what we kind of come up with and where we feel like might be still some open for debate areas. I know you and I were talking a little bit about this before the show, so let's kind of continue that conversation. And if we look at Rogers' post, we've got obviously the infield making up of Anthony Rizzo, Darwin Barney, Starlin Castro, who I think is safe to say he'll be ready for opening day after today. And then you've got Wellington Castillo and George Contreras as locks. And then you've got Donnie Murphy and Luis Valbuena listed in the infield. And I'm going to go ahead and throw in also Emilio Bonifacio listed in the infield.
Yeah.
Which confuses me. And this is kind of where we left off our conversation. Do you think there's a scenario where you could have Bonifacio, Valbuena, Murphy, and Olt? Because that was one of the guys. Olt was one of the guys that Rogers was talking about. Do you see a situation primarily Valbuena, Murphy, and Olt on the same roster opening day?
It seems weird to me that you would do that. It doesn't seem like there's enough room. I mean, even if you could technically do it, because you could say Bonifacio is taking up the fifth outfielder spot, but he can play both infield and outfield, so he's like both.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually do the numbers where it works out, but I don't see why you would do that, because how could you ever get those guys enough playing time each for them to actually matter? You know, I mean, because if Olt's at third,
mm-hmm.
Then a lot of people are saying, well, if Olt is third, then you switch Valbuena to second to maybe platoon with Barney. But then where's Murphy? And then where's Bonifacio? I mean, it seems way too crowded. I mean, I think if Olt makes it, to me, that Donnie Murphy would be the odd man out. But I just don't see how they can both be on the roster at the same time. It doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't to me either. I was thinking about it as I was driving to work today. And I thought about the fact that when you look at Valbuena and Murphy and Olt, the highest ceiling of the three players clearly is Mike Ault. And so if Mike Ault has shown anything, which he has this spring training, you've got to give him the job at third base because he's got the higher ceiling, and there's no point in at this point sending him to AAA. And so with Donnie Murphy, I see Donnie Murphy as having the lowest ceiling of the three players.
Right.
And so why not put Murphy down there? But at the same time, I see Donnie Murphy as being more versatile than Valbuena.
Yeah, well, I think Donnie Murphy's definitely more versatile than Ault for sure. And he can play a little bit of shortstop, and he can definitely handle second and third. I mean, it kind of depends where you're coming from. Some people are saying, well, Ault, you know, has barely played any third. The bat's been fine. He finally got in the game at third this week, and no grounders were hit to them for like a couple of games. And then finally the other day, yesterday, a grounder was hit to him, and he made two errors in one inning when he finally got a chance. So obviously there's rust there. You kind of expect it. I don't think there's anything to panic about, but I think provided he gets into more games and gets some reps and shows that, yeah, he can make the throw from third to first, and it's the pain isn't too bad, and, you know. But, I mean, there's the argument to say, well, if he's still having shoulder discomfort, why not just put him in AAA, give him more reps, make sure his shoulder's completely healed. Why rush him? And if he's a young guy long term, bring him up, you know, in the end of April or beginning of May. I see that. I just think they would really rather just have him start out the gate. And then what do you do with Donnie Murphy, though? Because if you send him down to AAA, does he have much trade value at his age? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's a nice problem to have. It's not like if you're worried about what to do with Donnie Murphy, he's not like your franchise's worst problem. So,
right.
You know, I think it's not going to make or break the team. But, I mean, it is something to think about. And I can't see Murphy and Ault being on the roster at the same time. But,
Here's an interesting thing that I hadn't considered, and I was just looking on the option years remaining. So Donnie Murphy and Luis Valbuena both have zero option remaining, and this is what the note says. It says any signed player who is – and this is coming from the Cub Reporter. I don't know if you've ever looked at that site, but they do a really good job in terms of the breakdown on the roster, what option remaining. But these guys both have note number 5 next to them, and note number 5 says basically any player who has accrued at least 3 years of Major League Baseball service time, i.e. Barney, Castro, so-and-so, Donnie Murphy, as well as Valbuena, or who qualified for salary arbitration as a Super 2, which is not them, has the right to refuse an outright assignment and elect free agency. So in other words, if the Cubs were going to assign these guys to AAA, it would be an outright assignment. And they could just say, no, we're not going. Obviously, they would have to clear waivers, and then you'd have to look and see, will either of these guys clear waivers? So I think at this point, the reason why Ault wouldn't make the team would primarily be a numbers game, not necessarily performance. You know, if anything, it's a matter of putting Ault at third base in the minors, letting him work out the rust at third base, and not hoping that one of these guys kind of makes the decision easy for you, but basically letting one of these guys maybe make the decision a little easier in the sense that one of them will stand out.
Yeah.
You know, but it'll be interesting because I'm curious to see. I think beginning May 1st or even June 1st, I have a hard time seeing a way that Murphy, Valbuena, and Ault can all three still be in the organization.
Well, you know, the other thing, and I think actually if you were asking me what I would prefer the Cubs do, the more ideal scenario for me would be Ault takes third, Valbuena and Murphy, that platoon, move from third to second, and then Barney's the odd man out.
Yeah, but you know what I was going to ask you, and this is one of the questions I was going to ask you if we were playing a game. I had thought about a game called, I forgot, basically something where, you know.
Barney or bust.
No, it wasn't, but it did involve Darwin Barney. You know, we've talked about him, and we've seen last year be a complete disaster, the year before that be satisfactory. And so this year in spring training, he's been a kind of a middle of the road between the two of those things. You know, is he still a guy that the Cubs are just dead set on getting rid of? Or is at this point, you know, is it just a guy that's going to be a filler until down the road? I think, because I don't think you definitely just want to give him away.
Yeah. Well, but, I think a lot of people were hoping that the Tigers might want to get him as their shortstop because they've had injury problems there, but they just traded for a shortstop yesterday, so he's off the table. Because a lot of people were saying a Schierholz-Barney package to Detroit, but, of course, the Barney part of that's over. So, yeah, I mean, you don't want to give him away for nothing, but he is an all-world defender, an amazing, amazing defender. Should have won the Gold Glove last year if you look at the advanced metrics on defense. But his as we know, offensive numbers affect Gold Glove voters. So his offense was so bad, I think that cost him the Gold Glove for a second straight year. If he could hit at all, just at all, he would be a great asset to a team. I think super great defender, great model for the other infielders to follow. By all accounts, a really great teammate. But, you know, his bat is so lightweight, it's really become a liability. So, yeah, if the Cubs can't trade him, and I don't know what you would get from him anyway, it just sounds like he's a stopgap until either Baez or Alcantara or somebody comes up and takes it over full time. So, I mean, in perfect world, we get an offer, but I don't see where that's coming from at this point.
And realistically, I think when we're looking at this overall, I mean, Darwin Barney is what he is. Luis Murphy. It's a combination of the two.
Donnie Murphy. Might as well say Luis Murphy.
That's what it is. Luis Valbuena is going to be 28 this year. Donnie Murphy is going to be 31. So if you had to choose between Valbuena and Murphy, you're going to take the production of Valbuena and take your chances with the younger player. So I don't think it's a big deal if we lose Murphy there. I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a chance that somebody would go on, you know, that he would go unclaimed. But at that point, when you're 31, do you actually want to take, you know, assignment waivers and head down to the minors? I don't know that you would. Yeah. But you know, I don't. If I had to choose, I think Murphy would be my odd man out because I think Barney still has value to this team, whether it be in a trade or defensively. You know, versatility wise, he can play short, he can play second, you know, and play them both well. And so I think even if you put him on the bench, that's above average defensive substitution guys on the bench in case of a late game situation. So I think Murphy, in my opinion, if Olt is ready, would be the odd man out and just take your chances and see if anyone claims him. And if they do, it is what it is, and you lost him, and he's just a casualty, and it's not a big deal. You make room for somebody. And then I think that opens the door for your boyfriend, Ryan Kalish. So
right.
We'll see.
You know, in this whole thing we say, like, you know, send Olt to the minors, which if they do that, it's only going to be for a short time.
Yeah, a week or two.
Yeah, this decision is coming, whether it be next week or in a month. It's still coming. So
right.
They're still going to have to figure this out because they're not going to keep Olt down long unless he just gets injured again.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason. He's 25. He's not like a 20-year-old kid. He's ready to go. I mean, they need to show him what, you know, he needs to be given the opportunity. So he's going to be on the club soon, either in next week or in a few weeks. So, yeah, they're going to have to make this decision soon.
Well, and my feeling is I don't care if he's rusty because what are we competing for in 2014?
I agree 100%.
So, you know, if he's rusty, he's rusty. Who cares? You know, it's not the end of the world. So I see if it were my infield, I would put Rizzo, Barney, Castro, Valbuena, risk losing Murphy on waivers or, you know, just outright assignment if he chooses to decline that and become a free agent, Castillo, Cataris, and Bonifacio, and then Mike Olt. And then, you know, if we have to put Kalish in there in the outfield, we can do it, I suppose. But I'm still not buying that one. But
hey, man, you got to root for Kalish, man. Coming back after those neck surgeries, injuries, and, like, sticking with the game, not quitting, not giving up, and working hard, and really showing something this year, hitting over 300 in spring training. Man, you got to be rooting for the kid.
I'm still hoping that the Josh Vitters demotion was just a cruel joke. And maybe
it was paperwork error, right?
It was faxed in
the wrong name or something.
They did the wrong name, and it is what it is. He's still on the team, and he hasn't been demoted yet. That's
speaking of predictions, Joe, you know, you made those ESPN predictions. Your roster predictions are dying.
They're brutal. I had picked Vizcaino. He didn't make the team. I picked Josh Vitters. He didn't make the team. Blake Parker didn't make the team. Everybody I picked basically got cut.
Yeah.
If
you're on the bubble of the Cubs roster and you're listening to this, guys, just hope Joe does not pick you to be on the team.
Well, and I think I said that Bonifacio did not make the team, too.
That's right.
So I've not done well, and this is why this year I did not pick a bracket, because I'm not good at this stuff. I'm just not good at predicting the future. So I just would be better off just watching and commenting on what happened rather than being a decision maker.
Right.
Which makes me laugh because I'm a decision maker in our fantasy baseball league that just drafted last night.
And
I feel good about my team, but that's because the games haven't started yet.
Right.
So we'll see. We won't bore you guys with the details of the fantasy league, although we may update that from time to time since there are some listeners that play in the league and also some couple of writers as well. So we will probably update with that periodically, and maybe we'll go ahead and make the league a public view so that people can take a look at it if they want, although I don't know why you'd want to. There's nothing really more boring than talking about somebody else's fantasy team.
Like, what I tend to do in my free time is look at other people's fantasy leagues that I'm not
exactly. Exactly. I always get a kick out of when people are like, so let me tell you about my fantasy team. And it's like, I really don't care, dude. Like, I really don't want to hear about your team.
Yeah, but I barely have enough time to keep up my own team.
Yes, exactly. And this is – fantasy baseball for me this year is a new experience. I haven't played fantasy baseball in honestly probably 20 years. I've joined a couple of leagues, and I've been that guy that's flaked out after a couple of weeks. But this year I'm excited about it. We are trying something a little bit different. We're doing a salary cap based on real major league salaries, and it should be a lot of fun, although we did have one owner that had a little bit of a snafu last night and happened to go $60 million over the cap.
Yes.
And so now he's going to have to fix that before opening day, and that'll be interesting. But, so I think the infield is probably going to – if it were my opinion, it would include Olt, but we'll have to see what happens there. Positionally, I think that's pretty much the only roster battle that's still going on. In the bullpen, I think we've pretty much narrowed it down now. Blake Parker was demoted recently, and at this point, I think we've pretty much got our pen. Do you see any changes to what Jesse Rogers had posted?
No, I mean, I think we're there. I think Cabrera is on the team because he's out of options, and he's played well. So, I mean, I think he's probably played well enough to make the team anyway, but because he's out of options, you know, he would have to play his way off the roster, and he certainly hasn't done that. And Neil Ramirez was sent down. I think, you know, they may try to stretch him out as a starter and try to see what they have with him at AAA, which I think is great. And, you know, why not keep, you know, I think you keep guys as starters as long as possible. They can always move to the pen. That's not a big deal. So I think maybe the last few spots there, it could be Hector Rondon, Justin Grimm. So you might have a decision or two to make, but it's certainly really clear now with Parker and Ramirez down that, you know, there's only maybe one spot or two that's up for grabs.
Yeah, according to Jesse Rogers' post, it is basically down to either Carlos Villanueva or Chris Rusin for the fifth starter position, and it appears that Villanueva's probably got the inside track at this point.
Yeah.
If they decided to go another route and put Villanueva in the bullpen, then you've got to look at a guy like Rondon or Grimm to be sent down via option.
Yeah.
And I think that they're pretty happy with what they've seen from Grimm and Rondon, to where I think they're happy with Chris Rusin pitching in AAA. And I'm perfectly happy with that as
right,
well.
Right, and I think if Villanueva becomes your fifth starter until Arrieta is off the DL,
exactly.
I think the smart move is to have Rusin in AAA to keep him as a starter. I think you want to keep him as a starter because later in the year, you know, you always need a guy, and he could be the sixth man up from AAA later in the year.
Yeah. Although if we needed a sixth guy up, I would rather have Kyle Hendricks, but, you know.
Yeah, and he may get his shot later. I mean, they may want to see him.
And I'm just not a big Chris Rusin fan. I don't have a lot of confidence in him. I kind of liken him to what was the guy's name? Probably about 8 years ago, and I know I'm just throwing one completely randomly, but there was a guy that just kept coming up and kept continuing to make his presence known, but never in a good way. I'm looking him up now, right around 2005. What was that guy's name? This is intriguing radio here. Who was it? It might have been John Karanka. No, he only made four, so I'll have to look. But, you know, just guys that just aren't very good.
Yeah, Rusin is always, like, never impressed, soft-tossing lefty. But, you know, if you look at his games he pitched last year and this spring training, he's been awesome. Like, the results have been awesome. Like, one day he's going to go up there and just get destroyed, but it hasn't happened yet. It's just like, you know, the game of odds. You're going to get it one day. He's not great. He's not overpowering, but the results so far have been good enough to keep him in the mix.
Yeah, no, he has. I just look at last year where he just was not very good. And, you know, it is what it is, but I don't have a lot of faith in him to be in my rotation.
Right. I mean, he's certainly not a part of the future.
Yeah. No. Sure. I don't think so. Boy, you know what I'm looking at here, and this is totally random, but I'm looking at the 2006 Chicago Cubs, and I guess I had forgotten about this, but so did you know, so here's the guys that made the most, give me the pitchers that made the most starts, five guys that made the most starts for the 2006 Chicago Cubs without looking, just off the top of your head.
Oh my God. Well, it would be Zambrano.
Correct. He made the most, 33.
Dude, I'm like blanking on all this because I'm trying to remember like the transition period right there.
Yeah. So here's some names here. So, for example, Ryan Dempster was on the team.
Oh, right.
Ryan Dempster didn't make a single start that year.
Right, because that was like he was closer than back to starter.
Yes, he made like, he made 74 appearances, no starts.
Right.
Now here's one. Carlos Marmol made 13 starts. He was the fifth highest starter in terms of number of games started for that team that year.
Oh, by the way, Cubs fans, since we were doing this draft with the salary cap and we had to use real player salaries, I noticed last night that the Miami Marlins' highest paid player by a lot is Carlos Marmol. He's the only guy in double digits. He's like almost $3 million more than the next highest paid guy in the Marlins. Think about that.
He's a stud, man.
Well, yeah.
But Marmol had made 13 starts for the team. That was the fifth highest number of starts made by a pitcher for the team, which is amazing to me.
I don't remember a single Marmol start.
I don't either. Point. That's the thing. And the craziest thing was, you know, he was the fifth highest in terms of number of starts for the year. The next highest was Rich Hill with 16 starts.
Oh, yeah, Rich Hill. What could have been? He looked so
promising. And then
listen
to this one. This one, too, blew me away. I completely forgot that he was a starter. Sean Marshall made 24 starts for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then Greg Maddux made 22.
Oh yeah,
That was a wild year.
What a weird rotation.
Well, and then
that is a weird rotation.
Well, then listen to the guys that also made starts, and you're going to want to throw up here. So you got Glendon Rush made 9 starts.
Yeah,
for that team.
Yeah.
Angel Guzman made 10.
Oh, another what could have been. Oh.
Juan Mateo made 10 starts.
Yeah.
Mark Pryor made 9 starts.
Don't ever say that name again.
Wade Miller made 5 starts. Kerry Wood made 4 starts. Les Walrond, I don't even remember him. He made 2 starts. JKU made 1 start. Ryan O'Malley, I don't remember Ryan O'Malley.
I remember Ryan O'Malley. He was like the local favorite, the Irish boy.
Well,
you know?
He made 2 starts and pitched really well.
Yeah, he had 2 great. It was like one of those like urban legends of Ryan, the legend of O'Malley.
Yeah, so he pitched really well.
He came
well,
in
then,
like just like out of nowhere, like just dominated. He was like a AAA spot starter, and he just killed it.
Yeah. And the funniest thing is he never got another start in the majors again.
Right.
Which it baffles me because at the time he was 26 years old. I'm looking to see now what happened to him. If he's even still in baseball. My guess is he's not at this point. But if we look at Ryan O'Malley's minor league numbers here, he went on to pitch all the way through 2008, but never really did anything. But yeah, I mean, just random, you know, when he came up and I didn't remember him at all. And then we've got, one more. It was, Jerome Williams, the Puka Shell guy. And he had, 2 starts for that team. So just awful starting pitching that year.
Man, they were piecing it together, man.
Yes, overall. I think
I may have gotten a call to start, but I just couldn't make it that game or something.
They were 14th in the NL that year in team ERA at 4.74.
Yeah, I mean, that's brutal. Because, man, the two names just that kill you, Mark Pryor and Angel Guzman, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, Angel Guzman, at one point, isn't Guzman part of the organization and is one of the – pitching coaches or something in the organization, isn't he?
I don't know. I just know that
he's working with like the Dominican League.
If I hear his name, it just makes me avoid reading anymore because, I mean, at one point he was the next big guy. You know, he was going to be our frontline starter, just dominant and just, you know, injuries and stuff just didn't work.
Yeah, it looks like, December 18th, there was a story on, Tribune.com. Former Cubs pitcher Angel Guzman joined the organization as a pitching coach of their Venezuelan rookie team. So
wow.
So he is in the organization. I thought he was. And so he's coaching down there. Hopefully he is not coaching them on the career track that he had.
Yeah.
That was filled with towel drills and rehab. So
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of those guys that was a what could have been. And it seems like there was a lot of guys like that. You mentioned a couple not to say their names, but –
yeah,
you know, it's disappointing to see some of those guys. I remember I used to go on a radio station called Sports Talk Cleveland. I don't know why Sports Talk Cleveland had a Chicago Cubs writer on, but I remember there was one particular Sports Talk personality. I can't remember for the life of me what his name was, but he would always ask me whenever I came on, Joe, what's the status of Bobby Brownlee?
Oh, man.
And I would say, Bobby, why do you care about Bobby Brownlee so much? And he said, well, because I have him in a deep, deep dynasty league for my fantasy baseball team. And I was like, dude, you should have dropped this guy like 3 years ago. He's never coming to the majors. I don't know why you still have him on your roster. But, you know, it's weird how many of these guys that were highly touted arms in this system that just haven't quite developed anywhere close to being ready for the major leagues.
Doesn't it make you feel a little more comfortable now that the strategy seems to be
hitters?
Well, and it seems to be rather than investing like a high pick, like, you know, first round pick in a elite arm, you're attacking that with volume rather than with premier slots. So your Theo and Jed have been, you know, as the last couple of years, you've taken the big bat and they're much more of a, no one's a sure thing, but that's a much safer pick. And then, you know, it seems like every pick after the first round is pitchers.
Yeah.
So it's like if half of them blow their arms out, you still got a million guys.
Right.
It's like the war of attrition. It seems to me as a fan, I'm way more comfortable with like, well, if he goes down, we have three other guys that are real similar to him rather than pinning all our hopes on one guy. And then if he makes, you know, we get heartbroken. So it's almost like I can sleep better at night with that strategy.
Yeah, I would actually like to see the numbers a little bit on what is a better, a more surefire bet to reach the majors and be an impact player, a starting pitcher, or a college starting pitcher or a college bat, and then a high school bat versus a high school pitcher.
Now, all the stuff I've read has said that the bats are much more likely to project and stay and not get injured and make it to the show.
Well, let me phrase this one to you then, and kind of see if your feelings hold true. So last year, the Cubs picked second behind the Astros. The Astros picked Mark Appel, who was a college pitcher out of Stanford. He was a repeat drafter after getting not signed, I believe, by the Pirates the year before,
Pirates.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it.
So Mark Appel goes one, Chris Bryant goes two, and then Jonathan Gray goes three to the Rockies. And there were a lot of people that thought Gray might go number one and Appel go three. So if you were the Cubs and you had second pick, and the Astros go off the board and just go with, for example, I mean, anyone, the number four guy, Cole Stewart,
right,
out of high school. So now you come up there to the podium with the second pick, and Mark Appel and Jonathan Gray are still on the board with Chris Bryant, trying to be unbiased as you can, because obviously we know that Bryant has future potential, 80 power potential. Knowing what you knew then, do you go with Mark Appel or Jonathan Gray, assuming that, well, obviously you wouldn't go Jonathan Gray because the Cubs didn't. But
yeah.
Do you think the Cubs, if at that point Appel was still on the board, would have went Appel?
You know, I think the answer is different depending on if you want to go back in time or if you want to look retrospectively, because there's a lot of people that said that Appel was number one on the Cubs board.
Mm-hmm.
But then he went, but they never officially came out and say that, and never will. They're never going to really, but people said that, but who knows? But everyone now is saying that if the Astros could go back in time,
they would
pick Bryant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's other, like, anonymous GMs are saying, Bryant is clearly the best player of that class, and if the Astros had to do it again, that's who they would pick. And he's an elite guy. And Appel is probably going to be a nice starter, but he's not going to be, like, Verlander or something, probably.
Right, right. I mean, I think ultimately what it comes down to is the Major League Baseball draft, more than any other draft, is a crapshoot. And, you know, especially beyond the first round. You know, there's no other explanation for why you can get guys that can get picked in the 12th, 14th, 15th, 20th round and become Hall of Fame players. It is what it is. And so I think, you know, you can do your homework, but at the same time, if you just look at the Cubs' first round pick over the last 20 years, not only is it riddled with names that never made the majors or even never made an impact, it's just riddled with guys that have been a disappointment. And so I think if nothing else, you can see that, hey, maybe it really is a crapshoot. Because let me give you an example here for the listeners that have no idea who maybe the history is. So if we're looking from 2000 on, okay, 2000, the Cubs had the third overall pick in the draft, and they picked Luis Montanez. And Luis Montanez, and this is his career numbers, he was a high school shortstop, has a career 129 games, a negative 1.2 war for his career. So obviously a bad player. The next year, Mark Pryor was selected with the number two overall pick. That one you can't really fault, and I think had the injuries not derailed him, he would have made a huge impact on this team. But then you've got a slew of bad picks. You've got Matt Clanton, who never made the majors. He was a supplemental first-round pick because apparently the Cubs didn't have a regular first round at that time. They had a bunch of supplemental guys. Oh, no, excuse me, they did. They had a whole bunch. Boy, they had a crap ton of first-round picks in 2002, and they didn't hit on any of them.
Right.
They had Bobby Brownlee, Luke Haggerty, Chad Blasko, and Matt Clanton, and hit on none of them. And they followed your concept of volume, four pitchers, and really three of them college and one of them junior college. And if you can't hit on four college pitchers, you can't hit on one of them in the first round?
Right.
What in the world?
I know,
2003, Ryan Harvey, on an outfielder. That didn't pan out. Mark Pollock didn't pan out. He was bad. I really had a lot of hope for him as a lefty, and he didn't do anything. And then you kind of get into a series where at least some guys have made some sort of an impact, even a minor one in the majors. Tyler Colton was next. Josh Donaldson, who seems to be the more profitable one out of the last 15 years.
Yeah, doing great on the A's.
On the A's.
Yeah.
Josh Vitters, my boyfriend, who hasn't quite done anything. Ryan Flaherty, who I believe is with the Orioles now. Or, no, wait, he's with somebody else. And I think he's going to be starting this year. Andrew Cashner, who I think will be a legitimate impact player for the Padres this year.
Oh, by the way, tomorrow night it's going to be a spring training game. Andrew Cashner versus C.J. Edwards.
I saw that on Twitter.
And if you think
today.
About the Pads, we got we traded Cashner for
Rizzo.
Garza. Or no, for Rizzo. And
for
then
Rizzo.
We traded Garza for C.J. Edwards. And so it's kind of like a loop back in time. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
You know, and then we've got guys like Brett Jackson, who hasn't done anything. Hayden Simpson, who I don't even think is in the organization
anymore. Hayden Simpson is the ultimate, like, the Jim Hendry.
Oh.
That's the number one example of Jim Hendry, like, that everyone always brings up. Because at the time, he was considered a huge reach in the first round.
Yep.
Like, people were saying at the time, why are they picking this guy?
Yes.
Much less, like, retrospectively, you know?
Then we get into some names that I think will begin to make some impact as we get into the future years. You've got Javier Baez, picked in 2011, Paul Blackburn, and Pierce Johnson, who I think will probably make an impact with this team down the road. And then Albert Almora, who a lot of people say will be one of the premier faces of the franchise just from his personality and leadership skills as a whole. And then Chris Bryant. So there's a lot of potential now of turning it around, but overall, man, they hit a dead spot. And really, when I looked at it overall, the highest WAR player for his career that was ever picked by the Cubs in the first round, and again, this is going back all the way to, I think as far as 1966, is Rafael Palmeiro, but he didn't do most of that damage for the Cubs.
Right.
And then Kerry Wood.
One bad draft can set a team back, but a string of them, 6-7 in a row where you just don't get anybody, I mean, that kills you, and that's where we find ourselves right now.
Well, and then we talked about the Cardinals, was a team that we talked about before the podcast, and they've got players up the wazoo that they have brought through their system. Now, not all of them have been first-round picks, but they've got guys that they just continually crank out. You know, the Braves are another team that I think of when I think of, you know, just talent that they bring up routinely. The Dodgers are another one. And so, you know, it's these teams that are hitting on your first-round pick. I mean, for example, the Braves drafted Chipper Jones, developed Chipper Jones, and rode Chipper Jones all the way through the 90s.
Yep.
You know, Dale Murphy was another guy. He was an older one, obviously. You know, they produced Adam Wainwright. They've produced Jason Hayward. You know, so those guys, they've got some guys in their franchise that they've developed that have turned into decent guys in the majors overall. So, I don't know. I'm excited about the future, but, you know, I think you have to take it with a grain of salt and say, hey, prospects are prospects until we see otherwise. But you can't help but get a little bit giddy over some of the guys that we're going to be seeing real soon.
Right.
Well, before we get out of here, let's go ahead and address a mailbag question. We had called for mailbag questions last week. I'd even called for some nonsense questions. Guys, come on now. You got to deliver here. We don't always have to talk about the Cubs. You can ask us all kinds of weird crap. We don't care. So viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. Let's get them. Let's make them weird. Let's make them interesting. And let's see if we can get some baseball ones, but some non-baseball stuff too. Don't be shy. We've got one mailbag question that came in today, and I think it's a good one. I think it's one that we haven't really even addressed so far this year. And let me pull it up. I've still got that that poor soul's fantasy baseball team who raised $60 million over the cap pulled up here. And all right, so we've got our mailbag question, and this one comes from Timo in. Well, I don't think he says where he's from, but Timo has emailed us here and said. His question is about Kouji Fujikawa. He said, there's no doubt that he will be on the disabled list for the first 2 months of the season, so I guess he'll start the season on a 60-day DL. But what's the plan with him going forward? And this is why he clarifies that. Usually when we talk about Cubs pitchers coming back from an injury, we say, take it slow, there's no reason to rush, etc. But with Fujikawa, in my mind, is a different case. If I remember correctly, his deal expires after the season. Does it make sense to roll the dice on him and bring him back to the major league team as soon as possible and then to be able to trade him during the season? Or is he worth taking slow path in order to sign him for a below market deal for next year? And, you know, we were thinking about this off the air. We haven't really talked about Fujikawa in about a year. You know, we haven't really mentioned him because, I mean, he got hurt so early last year and was done for the year. You kind of forget about him.
Yeah.
But what do you make of his question there?
Well, first of all, it's a great question, and we appreciate you coming up with a player and a topic we haven't discussed. I mean, there's the normal hot topics that are evolving right now, but you're right. He's a guy that was sort of one of the big signings out of the offseason last year, somebody that I think we envisioned as our closer, and you know, came in, unfortunately got injured and just hasn't done much since. So it's easy to forget about him because he's not on our radar. But, you know, he could be an asset. If he comes back healthy, that's the big if, right? If he does, he's shown in Japanese play that he's been a really good pitcher. And maybe he's not like a dominant high-end closer, but he could be a really solid, you know, setup guy or seventh inning guy for a team somewhere. So if not for the Cubs and for somebody else, so there could be some value there. If you're asking me, I think, you know, he's not a youngster. He's played professional ball a while. I don't think he's a guy that you that if he's ready to go, if he's healthy, he needs to pitch in the major leagues. I don't see any reason to keep him in the minors except for rehabilitation purposes. But if he's ready to go, he either needs to be on your team pitching to build value, either to see what you have. You know, for your club option for next year, if you want to exercise that, because the Cubs have one, so they need to see him pitch big league innings and prove he's healthy, prove he can go out there, you know, three or four times a week. And if not, you just gotta cut ties, I think, and not pick up that option and just, you know, it's not gonna be something where you're you're worried about losing this great back end guy if he's not cutting it, but I think you got to put him up there. Now that does present, we talked about the bullpen conundrum, that will present a bullpen conundrum maybe later in the year, but you know, you got to cross that bridge when you get to it. But yeah, so to answer your question, if he's healthy and there's no medical reason to hold him back, you either got to have him in big league team or just cut your ties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is, you know, really at this point, do we really even know what we have in Fujikawa? We saw so little of him last year, and what we saw of him was just kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that we even know what he is going to be. So I think the amount that we've signed him for is so low in terms of overall value, and I think I've seen this more as we were, not to go back to the fantasy league, but as I was looking at the price of some of the relievers, you know, I'm looking for guys that are, you know, under $1 million, and I'm not finding a whole lot of them that are anywhere decent. So I mean, Fujikawa's making $4 million this year, something in that range there. So it is what it is. It's not like he's making a ton of money. So if the Cubs don't like what they get from him this year, they can cut ties. They have an option, like you mentioned, on him. You know, you wave goodbye. If you do like him, you've got him signed for another year at like 5.5, and that's still a very valuable deal, especially if he ends up being legit, based on some of the prices that some of those other guys are. You know, I think he could be a trade potential if he can come back. And there's nothing to say that you can't pick up his option and then deal him at that point.
Right. I mean, you know, if he comes back in the middle of the year and he is what they thought he could be coming out of Japan finally, mm-hmm. he could be something that, you know, a team, you know, gunning for a division title or a wild card down the year might want to pick up and pay for. We might get something out of him. And another factor is, you know, the Cubs bullpen situation this year is so different than it was last year. I mean, mm-hmm. we're stocked with power arms. I mean, we just cut Neil Ramirez, who could be an awesome power arm in the bullpen. Blake Parker is still in our back pocket at AAA. We've got some real depth of some quality power arms in the bullpen, which you could not say at this time last year. So last year, Fujikawa was on everyone's mind. It's like, wow, this is our closer. He's going to be awesome for the bullpen. Now it's like we forget about him because, you know, not only has he been out, but we have all these other exciting bullpen guys to think about. So if he can come back and build value, you wouldn't think twice about trading him because he got tons of guys that could step in and do the job really well. So I think what you got to do is, if he's back healthy, carve out some time to try to get to showcase him, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I think the important thing to mention, like Timo mentioned, is he should probably start the season on the 60-day DL, which would clear a roster spot on the 40-man roster for somebody like Bonifacio, who's going to need to take a roster spot. And then, you know, if Kalish makes it, you might see a guy like Donnie Murphy that's removed from the 40-man roster as a result to make room for Kalish. So there's still some things that need to happen. I think if you watch the waiver wire and the transaction wire over the next couple of days, you'll probably see some 40-man roster shakeup over the next couple of days. But Timo, great question. We appreciate the question. And that one was a really good out-of-the-box one, so we appreciate it. One final reminder before we get out of here. We are still running a contest for people that are helping us promote the podcast. All you have to do is go to viewfromthebleachers.com, click on the show notes for the episode, which is just by clicking on the post for any of the episodes, really, but for the most recent episode. In that episode show notes, there's going to be a link that says enter the contest. And go ahead and click that link, send out the tweet that it generates, and you will be entered. We will favorite your tweet, and then that will be one of the favorite tweets that we go ahead and draw randomly. We're going to give away a total of 8 prizes. And so if you want to be one of those right now, the odds are pretty good if you go ahead and do that. So it doesn't take very much, doesn't take very long, and we would appreciate it drastically. Finally, go ahead and go on iTunes, rate the podcast, review the podcast. The more ratings we get, if at a very minimum, the more that we can get rated higher on the iTunes store. The higher we get rated on the iTunes store, the more listeners that we have, the happier that we are, would be the way I would phrase it.
Yes, our happiness quotient increases.
Exactly. It's directly correlated to how well you rate. So if you rate poorly and our subscribers and our listeners go down, our happiness goes down. So anyways, for that, I think that'll put this show in the books, and hopefully we'll be joined by Josh next week. We'll see. Next week will be an interesting show because we'll be able to talk about opening day.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. Next Monday, we're going to be talking about a game that just happened. that'll be really neat.
Yeah, totally.
So that's going to do it for this edition of View from the Bleachers Radio. For Sean, I'm Joe, and we will see you next week.